after a very hectic meeting, we are starting another one with a full stomach. I hope you don't sleep this time around. I'm sure you are well aware that the chairperson is still on leave, sick leave, after the accident. please stop intimidating him. the chairperson is on leave, and we hope that by the end of this month she will be ready to join us in November. Honorable Majeke is here also. She just started her duties today after that horrible accident. So once more, we welcome you, Uma Lucy, to our, you know, territory. We are here as the portfolio committee to get an account of your work for the year 2016-17, to check on the performance of the Uma Lucy, the issue of finances. You know, we want to check how far you have gone in terms of your programs, and how is the entity doing in terms of the program of actions that they have set for themselves, the implementation thereof, the challenges they have, and any other matter to be shared with the portfolio committee with regard to yourselves. I'll give over to Professor Folming.
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Makota, and Honourable Members, let me start by thanking you for this opportunity to present Uma Lucy's work to the Portfolio Committee. I would just like to introduce the team that's here today. On my right is Dr. Mafu Rakumet, the CEO, and next to him is Ms. Stella Mosemeg. She's Senior Manager, Strategic Planning and Reporting. And next to her is Ms. Jacqueline Rousseau, the CFO. And on my left is Mr. Dumasani Malule. He is the Senior Manager of Finance and Supply Chain Management, a recent appointment. And then next to him is Mr. Lucky Ita Wanyani, the Senior Manager for Public Relations Communications. And that's our team, Chair. By way of introduction, may I just say, just very briefly before I hand over to the CEO, that we come here on behalf of Council, pleased that we have made, in our view, significant strides in meeting our mandate, both the legislative, governance, and financial mandate, and we're therefore presenting ourselves to this House. Because we realize that failure to achieve our goals in these three critical areas would make it impossible for Council to discharge its fiduciary duty as commissioned by the Honourable Minister. I would also like to point out at the beginning that this is probably the last annual report that the current Council will be presenting to the committee. It is the case that the current council has already served 3 years of its four-year tenure, and the term of office of the current council started on the 7th of June 2014 and will officially end on the 7th of June 2018. Then I would like to just mention, as the members are aware, that we operate within an ever-changing educational landscape, many changes caused by changes in the sociocultural, political, legal, economic, global influences. And we want to be a significant player in education. And so we're constantly looking for ways to make ourselves relevant within the context within which we operate. I'd just like to mention a few milestones that we have reached since we've last been here. Firstly, during the year under review was one of the very significant conference that we hosted, the 42nd Conference of the International Association of Educational Assessment. People came from all over the world, and it was a very successful conference and brought great credence to the work of Umalusi and to the country as a whole. About 380 people, educational assessment experts from 45 member countries attended. Then also, Umalusi consulted and advised the Minister of Basic Education on a number of issues pertaining to new developments in some qualifications in the sub-framework. For example, the three-stream model initiative. Then for higher education, although this is, we understand it's basic education, Umalusi played a key role in supporting the Department of Higher Education and Training in its efforts to address a backlog in the issuing of national certificates, the NCV certificates, to candidates. This has been a huge administrative challenge for us and for all parties, all the other parties concerned, and in the end, all certificates were issued to deserving candidates. I'm also delighted to report that Umalusi Council has once again obtained an unqualified audit report. Credit should be given to the leadership of Umalusi management and the diligent and meticulous work of the Audit and Risk Committee. Then just one other point before I close. We have regrettably lost, under the year of review, the services of some highly qualified and highly experienced members of council for various reasons. And we, while we would like to convey our gratitude to these members, we've also been fortunate to secure the services of three new members, namely Dr. Maboya, Advocate Jeremiah Merabi, and Mr. Duncan Hindle. These colleagues bring a wealth of experience and expertise to council, and their valuable input at council is truly appreciated. So, as I close, I want to say the two ministers of the education sector, namely the Honourable Minister Angie Motshekga and the Honourable Minister Blade Nzimande, we appreciate their support. Also to the two education portfolio committees, one for basic education, this one, and higher education, and the Honourable Gina, and as well as the Honourable Connie September. We would not be where we are without the support of all council members, all members of the various committees of council, and all the Umalusi staff. And last but not least, the executive management is here with me under the capable leadership of the CEO of Dr. Mafura Kometsi, to whom I now hand over. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just before you make your presentation, we had new members also joining our team. I'm sure you recall the last time we engaged, it was the Honorable Gavin Davis. Yes. And then he was replaced by Honorable Olis, Ian Olis. He's on. He is here with us, and then that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shepherdson, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. We appreciate the invitation to come over, to come and present the annual report of Umalusi. I'm going to look at the background and then we'll go into the audit report, give performance information, look at human resources and financial matters. Just as a bit of background on UMalusi and its role in the South African educational landscape, UMalusi is the quality council responsible for qualifications registered on the General and Further Education and Training Qualifications Framework, on the National Qualifications Framework. Our council ensures that the providers of education and training do have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standards of quality. We are a quality council. We've been established through acts of parliament, namely the National Qualifications Framework Act number 67 of 2008, and then also the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act number 58 of 2001, amended in 2008. Our mandate is to develop and manage a sub-framework of qualifications in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority and the two other quality councils, namely the Council on Higher Education and Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, QCTO. We are supported in doing this work by the necessary quality assurance policies and processes. We develop and implement the necessary quality assurance policies in respect of quality assurance of provision. We maintain a database of learner achievements and related matters and submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Qualifications Authority for recording on the National Learner Records Database. That's what we do. We also commission and publish research related to the development and implementation of the SAR framework of qualifications. We've got a fully fledged research unit at UMalusi. We also advise the two ministers on matters related to the General and Further Education and Training SAR framework of qualifications. And we also collaborate with SAQA and the other two QCs in terms of the National Qualifications Framework. We do advocacy of the SAR framework and its qualifications. We are going to be presenting to you the report of the external auditor, which will be on pages 52 to 55 of the annual report. And as Professor Volmink has already indicated, UMalusi is achieving the 16th unqualified opinion since 2001. And it is a track record that we jealously guard. The external auditors have found that some of the indicators were not very useful. We are working towards competence in that area, and the necessary remedial measures have been taken. Maybe just to talk you through before I hand over to the Chief Financial Officer and Mr. Lamusimeghi, just to look at the vision and mission of the organization. We want to be, under the vision, a trusted authority in quality assurance of education and education provision recognized locally and internationally. We realize that the learners who qualify through our system do not end up working only in South Africa. We belong to a global village, and you find learners that have gone through our system all over the world. We try to meet educational and societal needs, and we provide valid, reliable, and equitable examinations and a range of assessment services in a professional, innovative, efficient, and effective manner. We are always looking for innovations. We don't want to stagnate, because the danger of stagnating is that we could soon be registered in retrogression. This is done through the development and management of the separate framework of qualifications for the general and further education and training, and this is benchmarked internationally. We quality assure qualifications and curriculum. We confirm that assessment is fair, valid, and reliable. We quality assure the provision of education and training and assessments providers. we ground our work in research. We're making a claim that we don't take serious strategic positions without having researched them, so that we ensure that whatever position we take is informed, whatever approach we take is well informed. We have values that we cherish, that we jealously protect, and that is leadership. We value leadership in directing the performance of others in the sector, and we try to lead the way as a quality council. We are decisive in making decisions that are firm and beyond doubt, leading to conclusiveness. We recognize the value of diversity. We embrace difference, variety, innovation within the various services in the sector. Transparency and fairness. Umatosi's programs and services are easy to access and understand. Our decisions and actions are clear, reasonable, and open to scrutiny and examination. We are professional. Employees at Umatosi are professionals, and we are trained in our different areas of specialization. And we are committed to service excellence, and we dedicated to the successful accomplishment of our vision. Quality is our name. Umalusi constantly seeks opportunity to improve our services and products. Quality and continuous improvement are an integral part of our daily operations. We work as a team, and we observe integrity. We observe integrity, and we observe equity in our system. Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to hand over to my colleagues to proceed with the presentation. Mr. Lamusimeki, thank you very much.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm going to take you through performance information, or our performance against predetermined objectives that were set out in the annual performance plan at the beginning of 2016-17. We have three programs at Umalusi: Administration, Program 1, Quality Assurance and Research, Program 2, and Quality Assurance of Assessment and Monitoring. That is Program 3. Now, that pie chart represents our overall performance in the 2016-17 financial year, which is at 79%, and then 21% was unachieved. When we compare with what we brought to you last year this time, we improved from 68% of achieved targets to 79%. We're still striving to get that gold part growing bigger and bigger until it closes up the gold part. So we think we are on the right direction. The next slide is showing status of achievement per program. In Program 1, our performance this year is 83%. It increased from 60% last year. That means 2015-16 annual report, Program 1 was at 60%. It has improved to 83%. That could be attributed to the strengthening of Program 1 management. You will recall that when we came here, we said we employed council-approved four senior management posts: finance, strategic planning, information communication and technology, and human resource management and development. That could have contributed to the improvement in Program 1. Program 2 is at 80%. In 2015-16, it was still at 80%, so we haven't changed our status there. Program 3, unfortunately, we've gone down. In 2015-16, we were at 75% performance, and we are now at 67%. We will explain when we get to the details of those three programs. That is just the overall status as at the end of March 2017. In Program 1, we have sub-programs that are covering governance and office of the CEO. That is where I report. Then we've got public relations and communications. We've got information technology. We've got finance and supply chain management and HR M&D. And all those sub-programs now have a senior manager responsible for. If we move straight to Program 1, this is how we have performed.
we had 6 indicators, as you can see in the graph. 5 of the indicators we achieved, 4 of the indicators we achieved 100%. The first indicator, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth indicator, we achieved what we set out to do in the financial year. And the second indicator and the third one, we performed at 99%. This is the one that is about paying service providers. And then, actually, indicator 113, our target was 98, and our output was 98, so it is 100%, 100%. So basically, we only underachieved in one indicator, which is the second one, and if you look at it, it is 99%, but we will explain what went wrong there. Program one, we continue. That is just a summary of what the different indicators stand for. The first indicator was about a financial audit outcome, which we had planned to be unqualified, and it turned out to be unqualified. In HR, indicator 113, it is how we manage our performance management system. Our target was that 98% of the employees must attain a score of 3, level 3 and above, which means they are performing well in their day-to-day activities, because that contributes to the operations of the environment. In communications, it was about utilization of our communication platforms. We achieved 100% there. ICT infrastructure. This is about the infrastructure that we have in ICT, because it manages our operations on a day-to-day basis. It was functioning optimally. And the second indicator in ICT was about our systems, how we utilize our systems, because for us to do accreditation, for us to do evaluation, for us to do certification, we rely on the ICT systems, and we attained 100% in that indicator. The indicator that is on the blue side is the one where we underachieved, and we will, in the next page, we will see what were the reasons and how we intend to improve our performance. Our payments, the reasons for why we underperformed in that indicator was that some of the suppliers turned out not to have to have compliance in terms of their tax status, and you cannot pay until that has been cleared. So that is what forced us to delay some payments by the end of the financial year, and we ended up performing at 99% instead of 100%. And in terms of future strategies, we've got 3 points there to say our contract management will improve, meaning that in the current financial year, we are dealing with that aspect, so that when we have a contract with service providers and the renewal of those contracts, we make sure that everything is in place on time. In terms of compliance of suppliers with those tax requirements, we are saying it should be procedurally verified when the engagement with the organization begins, so that we don't end up identifying problems only during payment time. And one of the last things that we are introducing is standard operating procedures, which we are reviewing as management to make sure that everything that we do is standardized and it has got a process from point A up to point number Z. In program two, this is qualifications and research. Here we are dealing with 2 units. One of them is dealing mainly with certification and accreditation, and this is where we deal with the management of the sub-framework of qualifications, review of curriculum, and whatever pertains to the qualifications framework is done in this unit. Evaluation of curriculum, we evaluate, for instance, in the past financial year, we were evaluating, participating in the evaluation of the NCV program, which is offered by the Department of Higher Education and Training. Certification is one of the key things that we do at the end of, for instance, the popularly known metric results. We are responsible for certification. But it is not only metric. It applies to all the qualifications in our sub-framework. Verification, this is where employers, for instance, would send information to Umalusi data sets for us to verify whether people have got a metric certificate, and we are responsible for that. When we continue the next leg of the qualifications and research, this is where we deal with the actual research work, where we conduct research in the organization with the data that we have, and we report on indicators of quality as well. We also maintain the databases of learners. And we want to be a lead organization in terms of research in the education fraternity. Now, in terms of performance, when we look at those the bar charts there, you can see that the first three indicators, we attained 100%, but you can see that there's an odd one in the middle there, 2.1.3. It only shows achievement. I'll explain in the next slide. The last two indicators, the middle indicator we have underachieved, we will explain, and the last indicator we have overachieved. We will also give an explanation for that. The next slide shows that indicator 211 was about registering of new qualifications. We participated in that and we achieved our target. The second indicator, 212, was the review of existing qualifications, like we were talking about the NCB program. Publication of research reports, we had targeted six reports and we ended up reporting on eight, because in the previous financial year, two reports could not be concluded on time. So they were only concluded in 2016-17. So we added them to the output. That's why that output has gone beyond target. Then the indicators that we did not achieve, indicator 213 is the one that in the previous slide was referred to as being odd. It shows the output, but it doesn't show the target. In the APP, there was no target set for that, because it's difficult to estimate how many learners we will end up certificating as UMALUSI. But we have since rectified that to say, because we can't predict raw numbers, we should be able to target it as a percentage in the subsequent years. So we have rephrased the indicator so that we are able to set a target. The last indicator, 214, that where we underperformed, where we overperformed, verification of learner achievement, you can't predict what will happen. So we had set a target, we ended up achieving it. So the same thing happens there, because we might be accused of overachievement and waste of resources, or not waste of resources, to say we did not plan properly. So these are indicators where you can't predict. You depend on how many employers or how many service providers will request verification. So if you put a number, you end up either underachieving or overachieving, depending on what happens in a particular financial year. So for us to improve, there were no targets in 213, so we have decided we will set the indicator as a percentage of error-free learner records for which a certificate will be printed on an annual basis. The last indicator we said, because we can't predict, as we've already said, we will also set it as a percentage. And this is what has happened in the current financial year, 2017-18. We still have certification and verification indicators, but they have not been set as numbers. Program 3, which is the last program, this is where we deal with quality assurance of assessment and monitoring. You know, when exams are written, we go out and see what's happening. When teachers are marking, we go out and monitor what's happening. And we monitor irregularities. So there's a host of activities that are done under this. Moderation of question papers, moderation of continuous assessment that happens at school level, verification of monitoring, the conduct during administration and management of assessment, the actual administration processes, concessions, examination irregularities, external moderation, marking, and moderation of assessment. So it's a host of activities that we undertake as UMALUSI, and some of these processes they give qualitative information during standardization processes. The second component under this program deals with evaluation and accreditation. This is where we, in a nutshell, this is where we, private institutions that want to be accredited, apply for that process, and we undergo a process of assessing whether they've got the capability to offer our qualifications, and then we either give them full accreditation or a partial one if they meet certain requirements and not allow them to improve, and then we re-evaluate those institutions. We also accredit private service providers, private assessment bodies. Now, in terms of Program 3, our performance is as shown in that slide. That bar chart shows that we had three indicators. The first indicator we have underachieved, we will explain. The second indicator we overachieved, and the last indicator we attained 100%. The two indicators where we have achieved our targets, the first one, it was dealing with a report that we produce at the end of quality assurance of assessments. We produce a number of reports that go to DBE, that go to DHET, according to the different qualifications that we are responsible for. And the accreditation also, we had planned to produce an overall, for the first time, an overall report that has documented the processes that we go through for evaluation and accreditation, and we managed to produce that report on record time by the end of the financial year. The indicator that we underachieved in is on the moderation of examination question papers. This is another difficult one because we deal with assessment bodies. Sometimes we expect a particular assessment body will give us 100 question papers to moderate, and they choose, we will use the ones that were approved in the previous financial year, and we end up sometimes underachieving because we set the target as a number. So just like in program two, the challenge is you cannot control what the assessment bodies will do. So if you set a number, you set yourself either for failure when they don't submit question papers to moderate because they choose to use backup papers that were approved a year ago or 2 years ago. So as much as we have said, some of the future strategies would be to negotiate with the assessment bodies to make sure that they are encouraged to set backup papers. But the main thing is in this year we have changed the way the indicator is structured so that we don't deal with numbers, we deal with percentages. Now, in conclusion of performance information, we noted that during the year we had some errors in the indicators that were in the APP, and we sent a letter to the minister to approve. We were not changing the indicators, we were just correcting whatever was wrong. For instance, one page it would say the indicator is 10, in the next page it says it is 11, so the minister approved that. And then we put in place standard operating procedures so that we can assist managers on a day-to-day basis on how to manage these indicators so that anybody can understand how we operate. The third point there is that on a quarterly basis, when we report, before we send the report to the minister, we check whether the indicators, the indicator outputs that are reported match the documentary evidence that managers are supposed to provide to us at unit level. It's a system that is new at Umalusi, so sometimes it's a little bit difficult for certain units, but I think we're doing well, considering that the last financial year was the first time we were doing this exercise. Achievement of APP targets at the moment are now part of our senior management performance agreement. Each member will be held responsible for achievement of the APP. We introduced an audit tracking register at the end of each financial year. Whether through internal audit or external audit processes, there will be audit findings. And through an audit tracking register, we allow each manager to put an action plan so that we can, on a quarterly basis, when we do quarterly reviews, we have one at the end of this week on Friday, we will check how people are doing in terms of tracking, whether they are, you know, they're trying to avoid the same findings being there through internal audit or external audit. And then finally, in terms of monitoring performance information, the Audit and Risk Committee has strengthened its capacity by appointing someone who is a specialist on the work that I do. So I have somebody that I will be looking up to in terms of correction and support from this committee of counsel. On that note, I will hand over to the CFO. Thank you.
Afternoon, honourable members. I'm going to first do a short presentation about the human resources. I'm going to stand still at employment and vacancy as well as employment changes. All figures presented is as at the 31st of March. It's a great pleasure to say that we've reduced our vacancy rate to 13% at the end of the year. Last year, when we came to report, it was at a 24%. In doing such, 36 appointments were made in the last financial year. During the year under review, 22 employees were recruited externally, 12 members were promoted, and there were 2 lateral movements within the organization. Like I said, we can even report at the end of this quarter, our vacancy rate currently is at 11%. So we've really tasked to make sure that we've got the resources in place to assist in delivering our mandate. On the slide, we've got per salary band, how we've got the number of vacancies at year end on the 31st of March, which at that stage was 13%. The next slide, our employment changes. As I've reported, we made 36 appointments with only 9 terminations. All of these terminations were due to resignations. This is a huge improvement from the previous financial year, where we stood at 25 terminations for that financial year. The next part is the financial matters. I'm going to do a snapshot of the financial position, the financial performance, and I'm going to stand still just at the accumulated surpluses, the irregular expenditure, as well as related parties. In the slides, when I refer to 2017, it's for the 16-17 financial year, and 2016 will refer to the previous financial year, which is 15-16. On this slide, we've got the statement of financial position, showing the assets as well as the non-current assets for the year under review. In our annual report, this is on page 61 as well. To show the current figures on a graph, our total assets is 97 million, of which 68% is current and 32% is non-current assets. Our cash and cash equivalent in our current assets is 66 million. Our property, plant, equipment make about 33 million of our non-current assets, with a small percentage, 8%, being receivables from exchange transactions, which makes up 5.7 million. We're looking at this slide, our current assets overly exceeds our non-current assets by a huge margin. The next slide, we've presented the liabilities as well as the reserve. These are also in our financial report on page 61, showing the figures in a graph. We've got 77% is due to our accumulated surpluses, 15% is due to our liabilities, and we've got a small percentage due to our revaluation reserves on the properties that we own. Our statement of financial performance is next. That's on page 62 and 79. Of the annual report. We've got the revenue from exchange transactions, non-exchange transactions, other income and investment income, with a total revenue of 152.7 million. Looking in a graph, over the last couple of financial years, the non-exchange revenue is the grant received from the Department of Basic Education. It has grown the small percentage each year. We've done our non-exchange revenue that's remained the same for the last 2 financial years. Our other income has grown slightly and our investment income has remained steady for the last couple of financial years. This is the interest we receive on the money that's lying in our bank account, as well as that's at the Corporation for Public Deposits at the Reserve Bank. In terms of our revenue, we've got for the 16-17 year, we budgeted 155 million revenue. We actually achieved 153, but on a revised budget we submitted, obviously we had accumulated surpluses that made the income to 218 million. It's basically added to that. Unfortunately, some of our capital projects could not happen in the previous financial year, although we did make some commitments. These figures are also on page 65 in the annual report. In terms of the expenditure items, we've listed all the material ones on this slide, indicating what we've done. We've highlighted certification expenses, communication expenses, consulting and professional fees. As you've noticed, that item has gone down from the previous financial year. We've got our depreciation, our monitor and verification costs. That's our contract workers we've got assisting us with the moderation and verifying of assessments and examinations. We've got our personnel costs, which is our biggest item on our income expenditure. We've got printing and station as well as travel and accommodation. On most of these items, we did show a saving. to look at it. In terms of our annual report, our operating expenditure made up 58%, our depreciation was only 2%, and our personnel cost was 40%. If we're looking at National Treasury, how they classify these items, there's a slight change where compensation of employees increased to 42% and goods and services is at 57%. As indicated, our operating expenditure versus budget, in terms of operating expenditure, it's just $1 million over due to operational activities. Personnel costs were under-expensed. The budget was $69 million. We only expend $59 million. That's due to the vacancies being filled only during the financial year, and our depreciation and amortization was spot on for that year. I want to report that we've committed funds at the end of the financial year. It's also reported on our annual report. We approved a tender to the amount of $36.4 million for the renovations of our adjacent building. The DB assisted with the request to retain the surpluses, and National Treasury has granted it. We are just awaiting the final approval of our revised budget that was submitted to the department. The capital commitments was also reported in the annual report. We've got a note 23 on page 83 that we've summarized that information. Unfortunately for the year, we did have a bit of irregular expenditure. The current year's irregular expenditure amounted to $487,800. This was due to the awarding of the following. We awarded a contract for extension to a supplier, but they were non-tax compliant. This is one of our sole suppliers for the license of our internal management information system. In trying to make sure we complied, we got them to register on CES, the Centralized Supply Database of National Treasury. As soon as they were registered, we signed the contract without double making sure that they were tax compliant at the award of the contract. We strengthen supply chain management to ensure this does not happen again. We will go through a process of condemnation of all of these irregular expenditure. The next items, we acquired goods without going through a competitive process of sourcing three quotes. The amount of $140,000 relates to two invoices that was used. Both of these were done for printing, which were argued to be a deviation in terms of necessity, but the time frames were very short. Obviously, these were not according to our auditor's measuring that we can approve by the accounting accounting officer, and it has to be reported as irregular. Again, we strengthen our internal controls in terms of supply chain, where we are centralizing supply chain to ensure this does not happen again, and planning regarding this takes place much sooner rather than later. From supply chain side, we've issued a tender for printing in the current financial year to make sure we don't have repeat findings of this nature. The last one was the award of a contract without going through a competitive process of sourcing three quotes. Here we awarded a contract to one of our service suppliers for hosting our website and the maintenance costs thereof. Unfortunately, we did not source three quotes, but we did go through a process to see if we can't take this contract and appoint somebody internally. Unfortunately, the cost versus benefit was not sufficient for us to appoint somebody, but we renewed the contract. We are going to update our policies about exactly how to appoint and reappoint on certain contracts and make sure we follow every supply chain regulation to the team. We went through we went through an investigation and found no officer liable in terms of law for these irregular expenditure. We followed a process of progressive disciplinary steps against all of the employees who were involved in these transactions identified. This was done already in the month of August. We will now proceed with condemnation to National Treasury as they've got a guideline issued that we're going to follow to make sure that we get it condoned either by National Treasury or by our council. The issues identified have been recorded and we will monitor in terms of the continuous improvement plan as said in terms of the audit findings, how we can improve our processes to ensure this does not happen again. The note in terms of the irregular expenditures on page 83, note 22 of our annual report. The next item, related parties. Here we are just reporting in terms of the related party transactions. We've got the State Information Technology Agency. We are paying them for our communication and information technology. We've got the Associated Institution Pension Fund. Our employees contribute towards the pension fund at the said pension fund. We're reporting on the non-executive remuneration of council members as well as executive management remuneration. Under related parties, we've included a pie chart. 22% of the remuneration received is to executive management, which is level 13 and above, and other employees is from levels 1 to 12, make up 78% of our total expenditure towards salary. It is more than the previous year, which was only 17%, but as we've indicated, 4 senior managers were appointed during the year under review. We've made a snapshot of the top 10 expenditures indicating what we've got under this personnel cost, which is the biggest item. Our moderator and verifier costs also make up a lot of the expenditure. Travel and accommodation, local is also there. Communication, printing, consulting has gone down. Certification, depreciation, computer expenses, as well as conference and workshops. On the next graph, we've included what went up and down. Like we've indicated, personnel cost, it's 40% of our expenditure. It did go up in the current year due to the more employees in our organization. Our moderator and verifier cost went up. Our travel and accommodation came down, as well as consulting and certification, computer and conferences. This is due, I think, to following the cost containment measures that's issued by National Treasury to see where we can save more costs so that the cost can be allocated to the items where we need the people. For instance, to the moderator and verifier costs that we've got in our organization. All of these expenditures also explained on page 95 of the annual report. Our current issues and way forward, the governance of Umalusi, we've appointed a supply chain specialist to ensure that our supply chain policies and processes are compliant to legislation. We must implement these policies and procedure. And the last thing is of importance that we would like to concentrate in the current year on monitoring of this compliance to ensure that every transaction that's going through is 100% compliant. There's also been external auditors raise the following findings amongst others. It's the accreditation income recognition that we've got, irregular expenditure monitoring in year and not just at the end of the year, our supply chain management policies that we need to update, as well as internal controls regarding the management of performance reporting that we need to strengthen internally. We're already in process of addressing these findings in the current financial year through our audit findings register and ensuring that we get on top of all of these findings in the current year. I'm going to give back to the CEO to do the closing. Thank you.
Chairperson, very briefly, we would like to convey our appreciation to the Council for their support and guidance throughout the financial year, and also thank the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education under the leadership of Megina for the opportunity they've given us to come and present this report, and also for the guidance that we get from them throughout the year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Honorable members, the report has been presented before you. Kindly engage with it. Honorable Khoisa, last one. Matches. Ngoni. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, Umalusi, for the presentation. Chair, I'm just having one issue to talk to. The issue of the audit opinion. Unqualified audit opinion. On slide 15, 16, payments within 30 days was not achieved because suppliers had no compliant tax status. Question is, when do you check this compliance? Is it during the payment or on the procurement process? Maybe a correct criterion will be not to appoint suppliers who do not comply. You have an opportunity to achieve a clean audit. You have been getting unqualified audit report for the past 16 years. It's in your report. Are there findings that are really so chronic that you cannot improve in them in order to achieve a clean audit? I just believe, Chair, that they have an opportunity to for a clean audit. The ball is in your court. Note that some of these findings, for an example in slide 44, seem to be minor. When you can go to slide 44, they seem to be minor, but they've costed you. They've costed you, but I'm just worried again with the investigation which has found no one liable. How is that? Can I be clarified? When you have investigated, you find no one is liable, but there is a problem that has been created, and that problem is man-made, but no one was found to be liable. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Prof. and Doc, your team, for this good presentation. It was as if we are repeating each other in questions, but it's just a point of emphasis, since this problem was highlighted by AG in their report. The concern was, now, why decline on financial controls? Why decline? You know, irregular expenditure is something that one cannot overlook at. And they look minor, but they show some way ignorance. Because if you give a person, it's clear, if you give a person a tender, you have criteria in place, of which tax compliance is one of the important criteria. You know, while I was in Department of Education, when people bring their tenders, I mean applications, you will check, do this person comply with the tax issues and so on. That is one. How can you, such what I don't know how to call your unit with integrity, oversee such an important thing, to give a person a tender, then you see during the time of payment. What also struck me was no official is liable. And you write it. Who did that? Who is in charge of supply chain? Why can't we say we have identified the mistake, although we have correct measures will be made? But what I don't get in your... You say you have identified it, recorded it, and will be monitored. What action has been taken to the wrongdoer who has done this such a huge mistake that has costed you the clean audit? And I see, I don't know, just for interest sake, your auditors, Sizwe Ntsalula, and with all the media, what, how credible is CISWES auditing with you now?
I noticed that there's a budget decrease. Is it 4.9 million? What is that? Okay, there's a budget allocation, decrease in allocation. How does that decrease affect Umalusi in its service delivery? If it is a decrease, you will correct me. Yes, you got unqualified, but not clean audit. What action plan do we put, do we have on reaching the clean audit? Because you said you have improved it from 68 to 79, and entity like Umalusi that is so highly rated, 79 is not such a distinction. We're looking from Umalusi 90-80 doc. We're looking 90-80. Not to be proud with 79, that in one mark that could have put you to 80%. You have a comment that you verify qualifications that were issued by suspect since 1992. Do you have an action plan that you can share with us on how are you going to reach this verification? That means your time frames or your targets on this massive work. As you know, 1992 is not yesterday. The doc, you mentioned that you are in collaboration with SACA, and in your report you say SACA is terminating its contract with Umalusi. Then what? How are you going to replace it, or what are you going to do now, having SACA as that important entity to you? You say you evaluate, you monitor and evaluate private institutions. I always have an interest on your involvement in private institutions, because there are so many complaints that we get from these private institutions. I want to know, how do you see or how do you evaluate the qualifications of teachers? What I would like to know, the parents of with learners attending these private institutions. They always complain that the educators in those institutions are under or unqualified. How do you make sure that the educators in private institutions are qualified institutions and not just drillers that drill learners with matter without a structure? Another one is that these assessment bodies that do not submit backup papers, is it not the criteria, me being an examiner, that it was in those days of our set when submitting your actual question paper, you submit your backup paper to the assessment body. Why don't you make it compulsory to the assessment body to say, when submitting your question papers, in order to run the program smooth, submit it as it has been submitted to you? Why do we leave some of the questions with this assessment body and not being with Umalusi? The last one, Chairperson, I have noticed that you have semi and unskilled personnel. Can you just elaborate to us what type of work are these semi and unskilled personnel are doing? Because with you, with the work that you are doing, we are expecting that you have the specialists in your area, and with all those vacancies, I noticed that 9 vacancies are on the professional one, and you said it's the report is based on 31st March. Now those 9, are they filled? Have you filled those 9 vacancies? I'm concerned with professional qualified personnel. Thank you.
You have breached our contract. Honorable Matches.
Thank you, Chair. I think she took all the questions. I just want to find out, I'm looking at your program 1.1.2, where you're saying that the contract management policies will be revised to address procedures for contract renewal. But I'm under the impression that, like, you know, you have suppliers which you ask, so new suppliers, obviously, that you ask for quotations. But now you're saying that, you know, your strategy, your future strategy is look at contract renewal. So it just doesn't make sense. You know, why would you do that? Because it's new contracts, supposedly, and why are you looking for renewal of contracts as your strategy going forward? And also I'm interested on this SOP that you're talking about, whereby which are imposed by National Treasury. I assume that you have, those are tools that you have, and you are renewing it. If you can just clarify to me what are those SOPs and, you know, the in terms of the renewals, what is it that you're doing? So please, if you just... I'm also a little bit confused with Program 3.1.1, where you're saying the indicators were restructured for the 2017-2018 year, such that it is not dependent on assessment bodies. And then, you know, I just don't understand how does it work. You have an assessment body that is supposed to submit backup papers for examination, but then they use the previous papers here. If you could just maybe clarify that for me. The other issue that I have is your organogram. It doesn't make sense to me that you have, for instance, on the I think it's the first table that you have on employment and vacancies. If you look at your professionals qualified, you're saying that in 2015-2016 you had 56, and then you had approved posts, not filled, but approved posts in 65 of them. So then I would assume that you're trying to, okay, you have to fill, okay, your intention is to fill the 65 posts, okay? So then you have number of employees that you have currently, you have 9. So 55 and 9 that are vacancies that are outstanding. So if I add that, it's there's one post that is one less. Is it me that is making a mistake? Because it gives me 64 instead of 65. But anyway, as well as the second one, which is you have number of employees, 13. Approved posts, 17. That's what you have currently. Number of employees that are employed currently is 15, not 17. But then you're saying that you have no vacancies. Supposed to be 2 vacancies. And semi-skilled, we have approved posts, 38. At the moment, we have 31 currently. Okay, you've got 33. And then you're saying that you've got 8 that are vacancies, that are vacant. So those numbers really just don't make sense. And also the terminations. What like is it the contracts that have been terminated, or did you fire some people? If you could just maybe just elaborate on that. And I think that's about it. I think she covered most of my questions. Thank you.
Honorable Ngoni.
Chair, thank you very much. I think most of the questions have been asked, but it's only the emphasis. The emphasis. You know, I'm happy with the report, and also congratulations to get this unqualified audit outcome. But we need you to get into the clean audit. That's where I want you to be. Yeah, if you have been with, for 16 years, now you must be pushing somewhere. Is the understand? The emphasis on this on, you know, you are dealing with quality assurance. Quality assurance. You know, when I look at you, doctor, I look quality assurance. Once there's something in quality, a bit of inequality, then I have got the monitoring control a bit of that one. I know that you can push, that you become, you do your quality assurance as you want it to other from other people. I know you can do it. Then on page 26, you indicated something about these assessment bodies. But on the strategy side, I was a bit confused because bullet number one says you will encourage them, these assessment bodies, to sell backup papers. And when you come to bullet number two, now you say you have restructured the indicators. That for 2017-2018, you don't become dependent on the assessment bodies. So to me, it looks like no, they are no longer that much of an emphasis. They are no more. You understand what I'm trying to say, Dr. Lamar. So if that can get me and give me indication on that one. On the issue of irregular, you know, when they say irregular, you know, even the auditor, when they have been counting the irregular expenditure in all the departments, it's millions of rands, and maybe it can even go to, I don't know. But before I get into that, look, this page 44, is it thousands or hundreds on the page 44? If it is thousands, then there are 319,000 rand. Then it's fine. Because some of the people, they will write like this only to find that it's millions. When now they start explaining, no, we told you, we did not ask that question. Is it thousands or millions, that one? So if it's thousands, then let me ask the question. What is the policy saying on the issue of three codes before approval? Even the issue of the renewal of the contract. What is it saying, and what is your policy, and what is it saying when no due process has not been followed? I mean your policy. Then how is it, Dr. Ramakan, is it happening? You know, I don't understand it. If you can just elaborate for me, please. There are these processes when you are doing what you call renewing, or writing a code, giving 10, whatever you are doing, it will go to somebody. The first person, the form is filled, it goes to the second person. A person must authorize. You put your punch or something, maybe your password and the like, that I approve this one. I approve that one. Then now you find there's a problem here. You start from the last person who approved it. You go down. How it happened. If you don't find any findings, any person, then the head take accountability. The head takes, how did you approve this without doing a quality assurance? You know, proper. You understand? So if you say there's no person liable, it becomes a problem. It becomes a problem. That is why we have the minister here. If anything does not go well in the department, who should be blamed? The minister. Why didn't you do that? The minister must go to the DG. Hey, they go there. But today we blame the minister because that's where you understand. So we say, why are you not getting a person? Because some of the things you may find is an oversight. It's an oversight. That needs, maybe it can be verbal warning, it can be a written warning, it can be final written warning. To indicate to any other person, because I think there should be consequence management now, to indicate to any person that, you know, if you do this, my friend, even if it's your friend, if you do this, you see, you are spoiling the whole potato bag. You see, it's just a warning, a verbal warning. So we love to see what is happening. But if it does occur time and again, then there should be drastic step against that particular person, because you have been doing one and the same mistake for a long time. And we have been telling you. So we have to do consequence management. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ulis.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Dr. Rakumetsi, I'm sitting here behind the pillar, but I am here, I promise you. Chairperson, thank you for that lovely introduction. I am replacing my colleague who's Gavin Davis. He's a nice guy. I'm much nicer. He's a clever guy. I'm, you know, much cleverer. Usually when we come to Parliament, we have to interrogate departments, you know, because someone stole the money or somebody's got, is a friend of the Guptas, or somebody gave the contract for the 40 million office block in Cape Town to their girlfriend, or, you know, and it's just so nice to have a department who, you know, nobody knows the Guptas, no one stole the money, and no one gave the rental contract to their girlfriend. So, yes, so we don't have to, you know, interrogate you on all of those sorts of things. Obviously, just sort out your three quotes but I mean, on a budget the size of yours, it's quite difficult to steal any money because the budget's too small. So I'm sure if there's a couple of invoices that are wrong, you'll sort those out and we won't have to waste your time. I only have one question. My question, though, is more about the kids that get a matric certificate or a bachelor's pass. That's what worries me, not about your stamp duty. And my question is a one which you might not like, but I want to ask it. When I was in high school, we used to call things Standard 6 and Standard 7 and Standard 8, and when I was in about Standard 7, as kids, we discovered this thing called the bell curve. And then we heard all about how back in the apartheid days, you know, how our matric marks were adjusted to fit the bell curve. And the argument was that from year to year, exams are not exactly the same. And the standard might vary a little bit. And so what you have to try to do is give everyone a fair chance. And so your matrics and people who now get things that we call bachelor's passes, which we never had in my day, you need to make sure that the standard remains fair and equal from year to year. And I understand that's your job, is to do that. And I accept the point that you have to try and make sure that some learners in a particular year aren't disadvantaged because the exam's more difficult one year than another year, and you have to keep standards the same across the country and so on. But there's something that started worrying me already in Standard 7, which is now Grade 9, and it's still worrying me. And that is that if marks go down in a particular year. The assumption that you make if you plug them into that nice bell curve is that it's the exam that was more difficult. And then you adjust the marks to fit the bell curve or to fit the international standards so that you can improve the results to protect those learners. But what if, and here's what worried me when I was in Standard 7, what if the marks dropped not because the exam was more difficult? What if it's because the kids didn't work so hard that year, or the teachers didn't teach so well that year? This year, I was approached by a head of one of the TVET colleges. He said to me, you know, the people that come out of school with a matric that are coming to my college this year, you know, some of them just can't read and write properly. And I've got to now teach them some applied, complicated stuff. And that's why I want to ask this question. How do we, when we are adjusting the marks, ensure that each little adjustment of 0.5% every year doesn't add up to a trend that ends up with us not being aware that standards might be dropping because it's so tiny and it's so incremental and it's over such a long period that it might be producing, we might be producing in our school system people who can't read and write, who can't do basic math, and they end up at the TVET college. And actually, we should have failed them or made them rewrite or made them study an extra year longer to get a better qualification. And I don't know the answer to that. See, this is the kind of question I really want to debate with you, not about your three invoices and all that other stuff, because that's just housekeeping. That's just what we all must do to make sure that there's no cheating. But the real questions as South Africans that we should ask is our standard of education improving, staying the same, going down, and how do we know? And you guys are the experts. I mean, I've got an arts degree, so it's not particularly helpful in some of the things I have to do here. So that's my only question, is how do we know that our standard isn't dropping? And I'm not an anti-Africanist. The United States has got the same problem. They produce a percentage of people who finish their equivalent of matric who can't read and write properly, but they've got a piece of paper that says they can, and then they go to university and the university laughs at them and sends them home because they can't. It's not an African problem, it's not a South African problem. I just don't understand how we ensure that the quality stays the same or improves for our learners. So that was a long introduction, but it's only one question. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you very much. I also have my question. Thank you very much for the presentation. Maybe also to join my colleagues to congratulate you on the consistency in particular. And I also want to join them that maybe as Uma Lucy, we have shown that we can do it at a particular, you know, level. And then I think that maybe if we can just, you know, lift our socks much higher to test, we have tested our strength, maybe we can just accelerate to go forward to the clean audit, because it's really doable based on the performance that you have displayed. The issue that I wanted to ask, you know, the other day I was traveling with my son, he was 9 then, and now he's 10 years, about 2 months. And then he told me that, you know, Uma Lucy visited our school. He's in grade 4. And I was, you know, he sparked my interest. And I asked him, who and what is Uma Lucy? And then he told me that, no, they were there, you know, moderating. And, you know, the teachers were so scared and all running all over the place, you know. And then a friend, a daughter of my friend was also in the car. She is in grade 8. She also knew about Uma Lucy. But I find it very difficult that in a public school our children do not know Uma Lucy. and what they do. I just want to check, why is it difficult? why is it like that, you know, children in other areas know you better, and those that you are mainly supposed to serve, the public schools, the children do not really know that there is an institution like Umalusi and their role, you know, and all that, because they were talking about the SBAs and all that, moderation, but they are in grade 4 and grade 8. So I just wanted to ask that question, but also to alert you that people know about you, even the ones that you never thought they know about you and what you are doing. The other question is the issue of the language. I've heard that Kusas was saying that they're going to protest if the exams are going to be written in more than one language across. I might be wrong, but that's what I heard, that they, if at all it can happen that the exams are going to be written in more than one language, they will protest. So I just wanted to get your view, because I know that the issue of language always comes up, especially when we go to the exams. And even when we go for oversight, we always find cases of poor language command, people failing. Like in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Eastern Cape, we saw that people are failing their own mother tongue. So I just wanted you to clarify us on what is going to happen on issues of language. The other issue is on the issue of the preparedness for the exams. How are you satisfied with the preparedness for exams? The department reported to us a few weeks ago that they are ready. And all the time we always find the issues of leakages, the issue of group copying and all that. And then if at all you have already gone past that stage, what have you recommended to the department to correct so that we don't have that, because it dents the credibility of the exams. And then maybe another one, just to get your opinion on the issue of the low enrollment of grade 12 learners. Like, we know that they have reduced the numbers. What do you think might have led to that? And then I think my colleagues, they have already asked all the questions. Thank you. Honorable Machesi.
I just want to find out, you know, we have, I'm sure you're aware of the situation in Vuani, whereby you had the learners who couldn't write their prelim exams, and they're currently now writing their primary exams. And what impact will that be, will that bring to the exams and the final exams? And what are you expecting from that? And do you have any contingency plan based on and that kind of situation? And also, just to add to what my honourable member next to me, Ian Ollis, has just said, you know, when I studied university as well, I was in a lecture room. I mean, I think four times, five times the size. And the first lecturer that came in said to us, "Okay, I can see it's happening again this year. The lecture room is full, and I bet you only 20 of you are going to finish the degree." And that's what happened. That was in my time. And my son now is at university also. Majority of his friends who went to private schools and quintile fives and four schools, they've also dropped out. I think it's very much concerning that the number of learners or learners who eventually get to university, they don't complete university degree, and It's something that is quite alarming, because then it shows that, like, you know, they are not ready for university. Something is just doesn't look right. Thank you.
Yes, you can.
Mention that your term is ending. It's 3-year term. Why is there no other way to do this correct? Your term should be aligned to the term of Parliament, because as then I say, that means in 2018 we'll get new council that will say they don't have background of this, they don't have background this. And what are your policies? Are your policies stagnant? Can't you revise your policies? And second term,
honorable member, I thought you were commending the prof and the collective for the good work done. Because it might be that we won't see them again. Mm-hmm. It's your responsibility. It's an act of Parliament that establishes the Umalusi. It's not upon them to take that decision. So let me just rescue the professor. CEO, can you proceed, please, with your team?
Chairperson, with your permission, I'll ask the colleagues to start. I'll mop up.
Thank you for all the questions. First of all, the audit opinion, yes, it's currently not clean, but it's unqualified. We are working towards getting that clean audit. It's definitely what we want to attain. But we need to get our house in order. I'm not sure if the Auditor General has alluded in future. They're not sure if they're going to do it next year or the year afterwards. There's going to be basically three opinions in the audit report. One for the financial information, one regarding compliance to laws and regulations and legislation, and the third on performance information. Now, just quickly, I just want to explain, when we give our annual performance plan, it's an 18-month cycle when you report against that plan. So these indicators that we're reporting currently has been set 18 months ago. And if a mistake is identified, you can only correct it in the next cycle. So a lot of these things we won't be able to correct in one financial year. We're going to have to go back to the basics, make sure policies are aligned, making sure processes are in place before we get to that clean audit report. Our decline on financial controls was due to those policies not being aligned, not aligned to National Treasury legislation, guidelines. So we're going back to basics in the current financial year to make sure everything is aligned. In terms of the non-tax compliance, all of the above irregular expenditure was in terms of quotes and no tenders. I must say our resources were not properly, I'm going to use the word trained, in terms of supply chain management regulations. In the current year or the past year, we also tried to centralize supply chain. But unfortunately, one or two transactions slipped through that was done by officials who did not have the proper knowledge to ensure that it was done correctly. As we identified, we don't find somebody liable in terms of they colluded or ensured a friend or family member scored any financial benefit. And we've got that in writing from every single person that was involved in this. We've gone the process of progressive disciplinary, where we got everyone together. We explained all the negatives and why we want to do everything. Again, we got declarations, attendance registers, but no specific person acted maliciously in us achieving those findings. It was due to not understanding what was going on. This is the last year that's going to be the
enforcing, making sure the roles and responsibilities have now been assigned properly to hold a single person accountable if that goes thing goes past them and they've signed it, that you signed for this, now you're going to be held accountable for that. In terms of our auditors, we currently have external auditors conducting our audit. This was the last year that SNG was our auditors. We're currently in the tender process to get new external auditors. We are doing this in consultation with the Auditor General. So before we appoint, they will also make a recommendation in assisting us in making sure that risk of accreditability is looked at. In terms of our budget hasn't decreased as much as we expected, but we had accumulated surpluses that was approved that we are pulling back into the operation. So at least we don't experience that cut in budget so much. We've also got our other stream where we are, the building that we're renovating is going to be occupied half with our own staff and the other half or quarter we're at least renting out. So we're at least insured of a revenue stream in terms of our other income. Like we said, we would like to get to that clean audit, but we're going to have to go back to basics, policies, procedure to make sure that we've got that. In terms of our semi-skilled, I just want to go through our top executives is our levels 14 to 16. Our senior managers is level 13. This is in terms of DPSA appointments. Our professionals will be our managers and professionals that's appointed on a level 11 and 12. Our skills is a big gap. That's basically level 8, 9, and 10. It's assistant managers and specialists in their field. Where semi-skilled will be the lower levels, the admin assistants on levels 5 to 6, and our unskilled will be our level 1 and 2. That will be our tea ladies and our general assistants moving our furniture around. In terms of our the number, the figures on the HR that we've reported. Sometimes it's very difficult because these figures get used in another essence to determine an average. It's sometimes very difficult. If a person was only appointed for a month, do you count in the position being vacant for the entire period? Or if he's got remuneration for 11 months, is it then... It's in terms of that rounding to ensure that the figures are correct. Because again, if a person was there for 11 months in the position, was the position filled for the entire year or was it vacant for the entire year? It's very difficult to determine that. We'll ensure that the figures are reported more correctly for those three. That's been highlighted in terms of professional qualified, skilled, and semi-skilled. But the vacancies that we reported in 16-17, that was the vacancies at the end of the year. Currently, we try to fill the 9 professionals as far as we can. But on some items, we did have issues where an offer was made and it was declined because of let's call it choice. Or we go through the process, but we can't appoint due to the remuneration that we're offering is not enough. So we currently are sitting with a situation where we're not attracting the right on that levels of professionals, which is basically our managers or professionals and people that we need in this. I'm not exactly sure how many of those 9 we did appoint, but I think at least half of them, if I'm not mistaken. We can give proper stats be sent to this, to the committee. In terms of the indicator for the payment of suppliers, we were very strict. We checked compliance to tax. We had the one finding where we did not. But in the rest, we checked when awarding. But we also rechecked at when we paid. And that's when National Treasury came back to us and said, but listen, you only need to actually verify upon awarding. You don't have to hold back the payment when you are paying. And it's in that instance that we did not pay within 30 days because we told them your tax status is not up to date. But National Treasury advised us, no, you only check upon awarding. If you've committed, you need to pay within 30 days. So it was the revision of our internal operating procedure to not verify again at payment stage that we revised to ensure that we pay them within the 30 days. If an invoice is under dispute, if the service was not delivered or the quality of service has not been obtained, that's an exception and that's handled separately from not paying within 30 days. As I've alluded, the number of employees on our salary band, that's the average for the year. It's not, except when we reported the vacancies, that's the exact number of vacancies we had at year end. All our terminations, the 9 during the year, was due to resignations. Our irregular expenditure, as reported on slide number 44, that is in rand value. So it's 319,975 rand on one contract that we paid irregularly because they were not tax compliant. Again, this specific transaction is we lacked the skills to identify exactly what needs to be checked. That's been rectified by beefing up the resources in supply chain. And I feel most of these, now all of these transactions happened in the first 6 months of this of that financial year that we are reporting. We've beefed up, we've worked on the policy specifically to get to a point where we can report we don't have anything. As I've alluded, these were all quotes. And I must say, while reviewing our policies for supply chain, there was contradiction between our own policy and National Treasury's policies. And we're trying to align. We must align to ensure we don't have irregular expenditure. Remember, irregular expenditure is either if you're contravening your own procedures or policies or that of National Treasury. Aligning to National Treasury is the best option, so we know we won't contravene any laws and any regulations. Again, I don't think this was intentional. It's due to not proper training, proper delegation of duties, and understanding exactly what needs to be checked. But we've all, action plans have put in place, we're addressing all of that to get that to a level where we can report everything is 100%. As I've said, we did take progressive disciplinary steps for all employees involved in those transactions. Management can provide evidence that we've done that. Yes, if we find in the next financial year people are not attaining to the procedures, they will follow a disciplinary action. That was the last one we did in terms of progressive disciplinary. There will be warning letters, there will be, even if possible, further steps will be taken. That's all from...
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Jacobine. Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions. The members of the committee are saying Umalus must get a clean audit. And this has been repeated by a number of the members of the portfolio committee. And we want to commit to that. We aspire to a clean audit. When we don't achieve it, I feel serious pain myself as the head of the institution. We have to graduate to beyond unqualified report that we've been getting. Because if we become too comfortable with unqualified, we'll regress. Will the process become worse? So this is what I'm striving for. And I'm grateful to Professor Volming and the members of council for having given us additional positions. Where previously we had used to have a CFO only, we now have a CFO and a senior manager for finance. So the gaps are going to be closed. The supply chain management unit, which used to run with only 2 admin clerks, is now running with all the practitioners at the relevant levels in our organization. So there are actually systems in place. We are putting them with the support of council, because when I go to council and I show them the needs and where they are, council has succeeded in giving me additional positions. So I want to make that commitment to say we are going to push that with the colleagues. Just one or two things that also the CFO has introduced is that she has introduced a checklist for all the transactions. We say tax certificate tick, this has happened, this has happened, this has happened. So that whoever receives a payment he has to authorize, he checks whether all the ticks are on the document, and he revisits the document to say, in truth, are all these in? That those are the checks and balances that the colleagues have put in place. The message in all the meetings that I hold with my staff is that we want a clean audit. And there's no one who's going to be a home destroyer by making us get unqualified again or even a disclaimer. I'm very serious with that when I talk to my staff. So that is the commitment. Since Nzaluba Goboto are credible, we've not heard anything bad about them in the news. If we hear anything bad about them in the news, we are going to follow the example of other institutions and how they've dealt with KPMG. So we have not received anything, but I need to indicate, like the CFO has indicated, their contract is ending. we are busy getting new services. this notion of a checklist, you know, I take my cue from the pilots when they fly a plane. Before they take off, they do a checklist. That's why we have accident-free airspaces all over the world. And when there is a crash, the whole world knows. That should be the case also with how we manage our finances. Indeed, the issue of verification since 1992 is in place because subsector has kept the record. The problem is before 1992, where we had TBV states, different departments of education, you name them, self-governing territories in the country. SAQA, together with Umalusi, is working on getting that data cleaned out. Some of them are on microfiche films, the old systems. Some of them are in files at the Department of Education, where they are gathering dust. And in terms of pulling them from vendor, Transkei, Ciskei, it has been a nightmare. So SAQA is working on that. That is before 1992. But as for after 1992, we've got the record that we are able to access from the times of the South African Certification Council, SASVET. Indeed, there was a stalemate between SAQA and Umalusi in terms of the verification contract that we have with them. SAQA was saying they should not be treated like any other service provider that does the verification. They would want to be treated differently. The debate was also around the question of repeat verifications, that when a person is in a particular department and he has been verified, and he joins another department and he has to be re-verified, we should not charge on those things. We have ultimately sat down with SAQA and we have found each other and the contract is now in place. By the way, the CEO of SAQA sits in my council as a council member according to the NQF Act, and I sit in his council so that there should be that collaboration, so that there are also deadlock breaking mechanisms where we deadlock on such matters. So we have worked through this and we are now working together again. There was a bit of a problem. Indeed, when we go to independent schools, one of the criteria that qualifies them to be fully accredited is the qualifications of the educators. It's a serious one. Not only that, their registration with the South African Council of Educators says they must be SAIS compliant. However, there are other areas where we are not able to stick to the criteria. That will be for educators, for an example, who have been appointed for physical education. He's a physical education graduate. He excels in the field. He's not a teacher. The school needs him. So that there's a threshold beyond which we say, well, we'll allow a few teachers who are not qualified because of the specialization that they have. That allows them to fulfill the role of, like, in physical education. So we look at all those. I need to just capture the issue of backup papers and give context to say every year, all assessment bodies, when they submit their papers, they submit the paper plus the backup paper. So that if there is a leakage, the backup paper must step in, must be used immediately. Now, it would happen that the examinations run smoothly. Only the paper was used, the backup paper was not used. At a point, the different assessment bodies will now see that we've got three backup papers. Why do we still set the paper, another paper? Because now the backup papers are piling up without them being used. That is when we'll look at all the subjects that a particular assessment body has and say they've got 50 question papers to submit. We'll budget according to our target for 50. But when they communicate with us, they say, no, we are not going to send 50 this year. We are going to send 45 because we already have 5 backup papers for this. Already we have sent our targets. Therein lies the problem. That is why we have to work on percentage, say, 100% of all the papers submitted to us. Because then it is also wasteful on their part to continue to send the papers when there are backup papers in the bank that have been banked that could not be used because there was no irregularity or no leakage. I think that paints the picture. And when they do not send a paper in a particular year, they consult us to say, look, we are not going to set the paper for these reasons. Those backup papers would have already been approved by Umalusi. So they will be current in that sense. I think I've explained the question as raised by Honorable Fasson and also by Honorable Machezi. The issue of semi-skilled has been explained. I was just thinking that maybe I should make the Umalusi staff members to sing clean audit every morning when I arrive at the office. We have a parade assembly. I act as a principal and I say, let us sing clean audit, and then we sing, then we go to our offices to remind everybody what we are aspiring for. Yeah, I've written here clean audit song sung every morning. I'll not go to those extremes. The CFO has responded to irregular expenditure. These are the issues that I frown upon. My staff knows this. When something goes wrong with finances, I blow my top. I just get irritated. It can't go on like this. So there will be consequence management in my organization where these things continue, and I find that people are not taking care of what they're supposed to be taking care of. Honorable Ollis, I need to reassure you that nobody is compromised at Umalusi. I'm happy that you are saying you're happy with the situation. Nobody is corrupt. Anybody who's corrupt is going to leave that organization. Because we can't be a quality assurer and be corrupt at the same time. I'm very serious about it. I truly enjoyed your comments about standardization. Wow. Really, we can share the platform with you. He understands it, and we can share platform with him. We'll speak the same language. I want to commend you for that, Honorable Ollis. We need to, however, get to how we do it at Umalusi. We don't only look at the tables, the graphs. That will be our quantitative report. We also look at the qualitative reports, which will be the context. What happened in that year? You know, were the textbooks delivered on time? Was there no teacher strike? Was there no major disruption of teaching and learning? That will inform how we standardize. And we have to appreciate also the fact that when we standardize, we don't only add, we subtract also. There are upward adjustments, there are downward adjustments, there are adjustments where we say we standardize and we leave the marks as they are, because the playing field has been lessened. So it's not only us adding, you know, to the point where the system will be compromised. And even when we adjust upwards for reasons. And those reasons are debated and ventilated in a meeting. So it is a reasoned position that we arrive at, whether we adjust downwards or upwards. Now, I'm coming to the question of a person who can't read at matric, having passed matric, honestly, nobody would be satisfied with such a system. And the question is, how has he been able to pass? Such a person is not able, supposed to pass. But I need to also qualify my response by saying, our giftedness is not the same as individual. We can all pass matric, but will not be having the same skills. He'll be a mathematician, Prof is a mathematician. I'm a historian. He's gifted in non-verbal reasoning. I'm gifted in verbal reasoning. I write essays. You give me an essay, I kill it. You give me figures, I hide under the table immediately. So people are gifted differently in terms of verbal and non-verbal reasoning. So sometimes when people meet, a person is gifted in figures or in working with his hands, and they can't write an essay, they say, these people are useless. Only to find that this person has passed through the system, through the area where he's gifted, which is non-verbal reasoning, figures and all, or working with his hands, woodwork, and so forth and so on. I can vouch for the South African education system. I'm a quality assurer. And I like what Honorable Ollis is saying, that the problems that he's raising are not local. USA. Last week I had the opportunity of interacting with colleagues at the International Assessment Conference in Georgia, Batumi. Same kind of problems. The parents are also complaining about the standards dropping, and so forth and so on. These are said by colleagues at the conference. So our situation is not unique. And I want to say the product that we churn out of the system is a product that I can vouch for, that can compete anywhere in the world. We meet South Africans all over when we travel and They are working there, they are very competitive. People are scared when Umalusi visits. In the words of Professor Kadasma, Umalusi is a watchdog. We don't use that term lately, you know, because we don't want to scare people.
You don't say Kadasma lately
either. Yeah, indeed. I meet people also who say, hey, we know Umalusi is coming. And they sometimes think I'll be coming myself, but it's my staff who do evaluation, who do SBA, and so forth and so on. Now, the reason why we don't feature much in the public schools is because the public schools are deemed accredited, if you look at the Act. Because they've got an inspectorate, they've got remedial advisors, they've got subject advisors, they've got circuit managers, they're deemed accredited. Independent schools don't have. It is Umalusi who then goes to them and look at whether they are compliant or not. So that's why some learners in the public schools will not know much about us. We'd want to still have some space in the public schooling system. This is our wish, but we are limited by the Act, and we are limited by our capacity. The issue of language is a delicate matter in our country, very delicate matter. It raises emotions. That is why where a paper is written in English by a child whose home language is an African language, we have language compensation. I did not get wind, Honorable Mugodo, of what Kosas is saying. I wish I could get hold of that so that I study what they are saying and get the context. But I'm saying we are still retaining a certain percentage of language compensation to deal with the delicate issues around a language and how other people are disadvantaged because they're writing in a language other than their own. The staff of Umalusi has visited all the provinces to check on the state of readiness of all the provinces to run the examinations. We'll be having a media briefing on Thursday, where we are giving pronouncements. There are no major issues. The issues that have been raised are operational and insignificant. They will not compromise the examinations because they are not systemic. And in a system as huge as ours, one would expect that there will be hiccups here and there. And I'm on record as saying the people working examinations are hardworking. They protect their work jealously because they work long hours and so forth and so on. And when anything goes wrong in the examinations, they really get hurt. Because it's like something that they've worked on so hard, it just goes, you know, because of one person who has proved to be the weakest link in the system. So all I'm saying is that you can expect minor irregularities here and there, but nothing major. But I cannot also vouch for that because I'm not a prophet nor a son of a prophet. Things may happen that will overtake us. I'm not aware, I've not checked the statistics, I'm not aware of the low enrollments in grade 12 this year. And I've not interrogated this problem. I'll look at it, and in due course, we'll be able to answer the question, why have the enrollments gone down? We'll engage also the department in this regard. The disturbances in Vuani have been noted. They've been disturbing since last year. Where Umalusi is concerned, and where we control quality, we don't compromise on quality because a student happened to be in Vuani. Use the same yardstick. When we look at the data that we receive from the DVE, we look at the data without singling out learners from Vuani. So it will be the same yardstick because it is the same qualification that carries the same weight. We can't compromise and say, no, let's treat them with kid gloves and single them out from the bigger population. In fact, as we see it with the graphs and the tables, I'll not be able to say where the Vuani children are. They would have placed themselves on the graphs, and the outcome would be that they'll reap whatever they've sown throughout the year. It is unfortunate that we have professors who will tell the class that 25% of you will pass at the end of this year. Very unfortunate. Actually, it is undermining the intelligence of the students that are sitting in a class, and can only serve to discourage them, not to exert themselves. The issue of whether schools prepare learners adequately for university education is a debatable issue. because the settings are different, the contexts are different. So that the social life at the university is different from the social life that children enjoy when they are in the care of their parents, when they are high school, at high school and primary. The approach to teaching and learning is different. And for some children, it is easy for them to adjust. For others, they don't adjust easily with all these other competing variables in the environment in which they find themselves at the university. So then we can't blame the schooling system for that. The schooling system would have done its work in the context in which they operate. On the last point mentioned by Honorable Basson, I just need to indicate that alignment, like the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, is dictated too by the Act. And even if the Act were to change and we say it should be aligned to the term of office of government, it could pose other problems because then everybody would be new. You see, the portfolio committee members will be new. They ask council questions. The council members, they say the minister is new. They say, no, we are all new. Maybe the CEO will be new also. Start afresh. So it is good that there is this overlap. Others are staying, others are going, others, and so forth and so on. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is my submission.
If I can just add a few closing comments, unless there are other questions. I think if I may start with your questions, Dr. Rokometse has given a broad overview of the position of emergency. But on a personal level, I want to say that you've raised three questions that I struggle with. The question of public schools versus independent schools, the fact that we are known in the one sector, not in the other, it troubles me, and particularly at the primary school level. I believe that, as Dr. Rokometse has said, there is a real issue around the fact that public schools are deemed accredited, whereas independent schools need to be accredited by Umalusi. In my view, personally, all it ensures is that the best schools are getting better, and I feel there's a moral purpose in schooling, and that is the best schools can not only be for the private good, it also has to be for the public good. So I think that's an issue that we as a country need to grapple with. The other one that you raised is the language issue again. You know, Dr. Rokometse and I have gone and spoken to matric learners. Let's take an example of KwaZulu-Natal. Brilliant. But cannot communicate in English because isiZulu is the main language. Now, for that learner to write a 20-page paper in math literacy, for example, which is so heavily language-laden, is a real challenge. And so I don't know exactly what COSAS has been saying, but they say everybody has to have one language. We will study that statement and we will respond to that. The final one that you raised is about the low enrollment, and Dr. Rokometse has said that. There was one year, we are now on our fourth education minister, and there was one period where the results during that time went up from 47% to 72% in 2 years. Now, we should have raised the alarm about that because it's not possible. The mathematics of large systems determine that it cannot happen. It's like population growth. You can't double the population in a year. You can go by 2% and 3%. So how did that happen? Well, I don't want to go into the detail, but it's well documented. If you look at what happened during that period, before and after, it was about 550,000 that did matric. During that period, it was 411. So there was a deliberate culling to produce that result. I think the reduction now is not for that reason. I think there are other reasons, the whole complex, the whole new reality, and also with multiple exams, opportunities. People are doing the exams in different ways. So I don't have that concern anymore that has got to do with the lowering of standards. Just before I address the last question about standards and the Honorable Ollis,
I just want to express my appreciation as Chair of Council for the general challenge that members are throwing at UMABC, and that is don't become complacent. And I think the CEO has pointed that out, and we accept that challenge, and we thank you for that. I think it is the case that we are much older than 16 years, although 16 years would have put us into adolescence. But we actually have a long history going back to the JMB, Joint Matriculation Board, and SAFCERT and so on, since 1910. And so we can easily reach the point where we believe as aristocracy that we can't learn anything anymore. And I do think that the challenge to move from an unqualified audit to a clean audit reminds me of the challenge of the Jim Collins' book, The Good to Great, when he says, the enemy of great is good. Good is the enemy of great. Everybody is just happy to be good. Nobody actually aspires to be any better than that. And so we have many good, so the reason why we have so few great schools is because we have so many good schools, and everybody's just there. And UMABC, as the CEO says, he's going to make everybody sing a different song in the morning. I'll try and sing, but that's not particularly my strength. So this last issue of standards, I think, as Dr. Rakumesi has said, it's been well articulated. So I want to just say just two things, well, maybe three things about that. Firstly, it's true, Honourable Ollis, that the standardisation process there to deal with sources of variation. And you've pointed out that it could be that the exam was too difficult, but it could also be that the learners are not working, or it could be that the teaching as the standards have dropped. So it's hard to be definitive about that, and therefore you have to apply your mind to each case and treat each case on its merit. And so there's a lot of trust involved, but a lot of professional judgment. Speaking of which, I think one very encouraging thing, Chair, is that the country, including the unions, have accepted that we need to adopt a set of professional standards for teaching and learning. And that has never been the case. So I'm very encouraged by that, and SACWA, SACE would be the custodian of these standards. Not just, some people disrespectfully said that without those standards, all you have to do is to do a mirror test to become a teacher. They hold a mirror in front of you, and say breathe. And if there's any vapor on that, you give the certificate. So those days are over now. You have to do a bit more than just breathing. But Honourable Hollis, I just want to say one thing as a tongue-in-cheek. We do not use a bell curve. We use an ogive curve. Now, of course, the ogive curve is also called the ogive curve because people think that we give them all the time. But the bell curve is a normal distribution. And by the way, somebody has said, you know, there's the average whole bunch of people in the middle. And so why is it that the bell curve looks like that? So many people in the average. And somebody else said, well, I don't know. I just think God loves average people more, so he made more of them. So, you know, we have a whole bunch of people there. And I believe that. But I just want to say that norm, the norm that we use to judge the standards, is based on a 5-year average. It's a 5-year average, and that average is not the adjusted average. We take the raw score, and we look at the raw score without any adjustments over a 5-year period, and how this year's cohort is doing in relation to that norm. The only other thing I can say about standards, and it is a long discussion, Dr. Rakumesi has said that, is that what we as UMABC doing, and we've recently been told by one person that, you know, at this school we used to have only X number of A's. Now we have Y number of A's. That worries us, because our job is to ensure that the A remains A. The average will not shift much, but there's those extremities. We can't have many more failures, and we can't have
an indication that the standards are dropping if you suddenly go from 10 A's to 30 A's in the same school. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Members, that was the presentation by Uma Lucy on the annual report. I hope that next year when we meet, we don't know whether you'll be there, Prof, for this type of session, because anything is possible. You might come back or not come back. We hope that by then you'll be giving us, you know, bottles of champagne to, you know, to celebrate with you, you know, that clean audit. But, you know, I still believe that even though we want the clean audit, there was a time that when the minister of the former Minister of Finance took over as the Minister of COGTA and started grappling with issues of performance and financial difficulties with the municipality, started saying that there is nothing like clean audit. So we would like to appreciate the new stance that you, the Auditor General is going to take in terms of reviewing performance, because that three-stage approach that Ms. Rosso highlighted will come a long way to help us even to better, you know, play oversight over you, because it's not only about the spending patterns, you know, it's not only about you having, you know, built or, you know, awarded a certificate, but it's also about other matters of governance within the institution. You know, they all count, and they must all be, you know, weighed, you know, properly weighted. So, members, thank you very much for making this meeting very successful.
Chair, just before they leave, I was in hospital and then at time recovering after the accident, and Uma Lucy sent flowers. I'd just like to thank them for the card and the flowers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Uma Lucy, for the support. We know that you sent similar, you know, to the chairperson and Honorable Majeke. We also saw the message of condolences to the Honorable Khoza. We really appreciate the spirit of family that has been displayed, and Ubuntu, because we are one big family, irrespective of our different responsibilities. Thank you very much. So appreciated. Members, I was on the way of declaring the meeting closed. But before we close the meeting, Honorable Ollis has hinted to me that we had a report that we still had to adopt. I hope the members, you still have that report with you, the first quarter report. It was only one page, so there was a need for the changes to be reflected. Since when you are part of the family, this is nothing new to you. It's a public meeting. You can listen. Members, there was a point that was raised in the previous meeting with regard to the fourth quarter report, where Mr. Brown had to effect some of the changes to reflect Honorable Khoza and Honorable Basson. I'm trying to make sure that you do it easily outside by finishing the meeting. I'm saying Mr. Brown has effected some of the changes which were pointed to us by Honorable Ollis in the previous meeting. So we just needed those to be effected in the report so that we can adopt the report, the fourth quarter report. It was just a few lines. Two in particular, on sanitation and water, the targets, that were met. I don't know if Mr. Brown did send you the edited version. If indeed he did, what we have to do is to adopt that report. Can Mr. Brown read the edited part so that we are able to check if it conforms? Can you borrow a copy of your report? Oh, you have it?
Chair, I can just say while you're looking for the report, I've read the changes and I'm quite happy with the corrections as they are in the edited version. We can adopt it.
The changes that we had to make was with regards to target of number of schools provided with water through ACIDI, which had to reflect as
Chair, can I just assist? The figures after checking it were incorrect as per the tables submitted by the department for that quarter, and we have corrected it, and it speaks exactly to those figures here, in that the target was set at 280 schools annually, but for the quarter under review, 19 schools were provided with water, but for the four quarters combined, 29 schools were provided with water for 2016-17. This was a negative deviation of 251. Now that is 251 less the 19. Yes? 280?
280 minus
29. Yeah.
Correct.
Similarly, for the what the other one was sanitation. The target was 265. The quarter and review, 21 schools were provided with sanitation. For all four quarters combined, 30 schools were provided with sanitation for 2016-17. There was a negative deviation of 235. Mm-hmm. So that's 235 of, and you add the 21 schools that was provided, gives you the 265. Mm-hmm. Yes? Sorry, the 30 schools. My apologies, the 30 schools.
235
out of 30?
265 schools were provided.
30 schools were provided out of the 265, left a negative deviation of 235.
Okay.
That's correct. In fact, if you read the annual report, the printed one with the glossy cover, the numbers are wrong in there because it doesn't add up to 280.
Okay, members. Can we call for a mover and a seconder for the report? But, you know, members, it's not as obvious as you think, because it must be recorded. Honorable Costa.
Chairperson, I move that the report be adopted with the corrections made.
Thank you very much. Honorable Larson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the adoption of that report. I thought that.
Any objection? No objection. The report is duly adopted. Thank you very much. The meeting. And